Welcome to the Gold Digger podcast series, a series that investigates the mysterious decline of Australian rugby union. It's a fan's journey into the void to pick up the pieces of Australian rugby union and find a path forward to fortune and glory. I'm your host and humble rugby servant, Matt Durrant. And welcome to episode 37. Now, I'm going to set the scene. It's late night in London. I've just finished watching South Africa and France in a pretty epic game in which ended in a French victory. Their record win is maintained. And I'm drinking some wine. It's been a long day. This is a bit of a return to the old episodes, the original ones. If anyone ever started from the beginning or listened to the beginning, you knew it was just me rambling to myself before I started to piece together more interesting people or interview, you know, far more knowledgeable rugby personalities. But it's been a while between episodes. I've been pretty flat out in my day job, family, you know, all the usual things that catch up with you in life, and has taken me away from being able to devote time to the pod. Since the film has come out in Australia, I must admit I've taken my foot off the gas a little bit, just wanting to sort of, you know, savor the moment, but also take a breath and do other things. But I feel that it is, you know, I should at least put forward an episode where it just brings people up to speed. And I'm drinking a wine. I was going to crack open a bottle of Italian wine, but given today's result, I've gone for Portuguese wine, and I've drunk a bit of it, as you can probably start to gather. I don't sound like Drew Mitchell did on Stan tonight, but you know, give me an hour or two, and I'll probably get there. So today, watching the Wallabies is pretty much lands me back where I started. I have to say, this is why I made this whole thing in the first place, because of days like today and games like today. And, you know, I thought, well, it's probably a good time for me to just hit record and talk some shit, for want of a better word. I imagine there are rugby fans out there either waking up on a Sunday morning and you know, kicking the dirt and going off into the garden or going to the beach or just finding something else to do to cleanse the mind. Or there may be many of you like me who live abroad and are coming to the end of an evening, end of a day, middle of the day, and just thinking, God, how do we continue to get ourselves in these situations? You know, we've never lost to Italy. Never. And we never lose to Italy. No one loses to Italy. And I don't want to take anything away from, you know, the Italians who, you know, have been trying to sort of get their national team up a rung. You know, they've been struggling in Six Nations for years, and, you know, they've got professional teams in the URC, which seems to be sort of now kind of moving in the right direction. So, you know, all credit to them for winning, and all credit to the Italian fans for who have stuck by them all this time. But it still sucks as a Wallaby fan. I'm very sorry if you're going to hear all this. I'm not going to edit this. This is going to be fairly raw and unfiltered. So, you know, what's the point of me chatting? Well, maybe you're driving in your car, heading to work. Maybe you're sitting on the bus. Maybe you're just sitting around at home and you just want someone to listen to, or you're talking to yourself like I've been doing probably for the last couple of hours about, you know, where we're at in Australian rugby. Yeah, there's some positive things that have happened. And I think if anyone has watched my film, they know that, you know, I am looking hopefully into the future. And I've always said that because I feel that we have everything we need in Australia. It's not like we're a country without players, without money, without good competitions, without, you know, schools and academies and pathways and all these things that you need to become a top rugby playing nation. We've got it all. And we've been there before. We know what it's like to be at the top because we got there once. But it continues to just be very painful to see the Wallabies go a step forward and then two steps backwards. And we can put all the excuses we want out there around injuries this year, the problems with, you know, players living overseas and not having access to the right talent and, you know, being on tour, whatever you want to say, whatever excuse you want to put out there. But losing to Italy for me is like another alarm bell, and it's another indicator that we're not moving in the right direction. And, you know, this is where I feel that, you know, I felt like this in 2011 when we lost to Samoa. I felt like this when we lost to, you know, Scotland in 2017, you know, and then we had that sort of horror run with losses to, you know, all the Celtic nations, well, yeah, you know, Irish at home, and then obviously the English whitewashing us. And then you look at where we've come this year, and, you know, we got beaten again by the English at home. We haven't been able to beat the Kiwis, despite a bizarre refereeing decision in Melbourne. And, you know, we just are not looking like we're moving in the right direction. You know, big loss to Argentina away. That was tough. That was really tough to watch. And, you know, I'm not throwing blame at players, coaches, because it's not their fault. The players are probably hurting the most out there. I don't know if any players listen to this. Probably not. But if you are, it's not your fault. You're probably trying your best. It sort of bugs me when people say, well, they're not kind of, you know, playing for their country. They're not, you know, putting heart into it. Well, that's just bullshit. Of course they are. You know, and the coaches are obviously trying their darndest as well. You know, Dave Rennie is doing everything he can to figure it out. He's got Laurie Fisher, you know, Petrus, you know, great forwards coach. Like, you know, there are fantastic brains there. Scott Robertson could be coaching the Wallabies now, and we'd probably be seeing the same result. Our system is broken, people. And I know I've been jumping up and down about this on social media. I've certainly put that in the film. And, you know, I was half thinking of perhaps writing an article or something. But, you know, there's enough people who are writing good stuff. And, you know, what have I really got to say that's that different? I think I'll just, you know, stick to this podcast for now, drinking wine and talking a bit of smack. But there is a massive problem, and something's been rotten for a while. And I'm very worried that we're not moving in the right direction. You know, we don't lose to teams like this and then suddenly win World Cups. It just doesn't really happen. You don't have the record that Rennie has had and then suddenly take a team all the way. It doesn't really happen. I know we want it to happen. It's the Hollywood story we're hoping for, but, you know, the old saying goes, it's the hope that kills you. And at the moment, I'm trying not to actually have too much hope because I don't want to. I don't want it to kill me. What do you talk about the game? I mean, that's statistically about the game. I don't know. I thought Will Skelton looked great. I'd love to see us try and, I don't know, get a lawyer, get some money and just say, you know what, maybe we do need you back in the fold next year. You know, he really did look like he was trying all he could to do. Other players stood up. You know, Marky Mark, Noah Konitawasi, he was trying his best, doing the odd flick move, probably didn't come off, but, you know, didn't look like he was sort of too startled. Other players, Jock Campbell, I thought, has looked comfortable at fullback at the back there. I think maybe he could be the answer, bizarrely. I think out of the, you know, the last few weeks, he actually looks like a bit of a solid pick. You know, Banks is not fit, but I don't know if he's going to be around next year to be. You know, he'd have to be a wild card, and unless Beale's going to just be given it, which I think is a bit of a throwback. You know, those are the sorts of decisions we should stick with. But, you know, Rennie probably didn't do any favours selecting the team he did, you know, churning through. And I just get the sense that he's desperately searching for a solution. Yes, they want to give people game time, but, you know, can you really expect to put together a team full of so many different parts and put it up against an international test side and expect a good result? Just not today, not in this day and age. And, you know, that obviously brings me to the dreaded C word, which I know everyone's probably bored with and they probably hate me bringing it up. And but I'm going to bring it up anyway because it's smacking us in the face again and again. Cohesion. There was none of it in the Wallaby team, and there was plenty of it in the Italian team. Just jump on and look at the lineup and look at who plays for Italy. And out of the match day 23, 13 of them play for Benetton. And Garbisi, yes, he plays at Montpellier. Where did he come from before Montpellier? Benetton. So let's say it's 14. I mean, at some point, people have to recognise that there is seriousness behind this. It's not a surprise that teams play better when they have a stack load of guys from a good professional club who've played together. Like, I mean, Ireland are there because of Leinster. It's as plain as that. The Jaguares are behind Argentina's rise in the recent years. It's why they beat us. It's why they're competitive. They don't have five Super Rugby teams. They don't need them. Currently, they don't have a Super Rugby team, and I think that's going to bite them in the bum in a few years' time when this current generation of guys go through and then, you know, basically just becomes guys picked from Europe. Mark my words, and if the Jaguares and Argentina don't do something in the next couple of seasons, they will go backwards. But this thing is real, and I don't know to what degree we have to see the Wallabies continue to have bad losses before we decide that actually we need to figure out a way to rejig our system. And I know that there are lots of different ideas and there's a lot of criticisms around shrinking to success and cutting teams, and I totally get that. And I'm from the, you know, I support the force, so of course I get that. But, you know, I sort of like the Wallabies, and, you know, we have to start thinking of, well, call it shrinking, call it realigning, call it streamlining, you know, call it whatever you want, but something has to change. We cannot keep going along with the same model and expecting a different result. I don't actually think Einstein said that. People love to say that was an Einstein comment, that it's the definition of insanity, but it's very true. Australian rugby has done some new things this year. What have we done? We've put together Australia A. Well, that's probably helped us, actually. If we didn't have that, I think we'd probably be seeing worse results. The Super Rugby teams have had a couple of tour matches now in the last sort of month. Fantastic. Play as much as you can. There probably should be a mini tournament between the five provinces and whoever's left over in the squads now, just to give guys game time. But, you know, and even those innovations to me prove that the administration realised that this is an issue, that Australian rugby doesn't have cohesion, that it doesn't have what other countries have, and they're desperately searching for a solution and a way to get it back in the most cheapest possible way, because we don't have money, which is obviously the other massive, massive issue. There was a fantastic podcast, and I'm going to point, if you haven't listened to it, I'll point you out to it. It was Jim Hamilton from Rugby Pass. He has the Rugby Pod, pretty popular, and he actually, funnily enough, was commentating the Amazon Prime telecast of the Wallabies match today, and he was pretty good. He's very funny, Jim. But he has his own podcast, and he interviewed Mark Evans. So if you Google Jim Hamilton, Mark Evans podcast interview, you'll find it. It's on YouTube and probably on all, you know, podcast stores. But Mark Evans is a CEO from Harlequins, former player. He was CEO at Harlequins Rugby Club in England. He was then at the Melbourne Storm. He was head of the Storm and was also head of the Western Force. Was trying to lead the charge for global rapid rugby. So the people from the Force know him very well, and people from Melbourne will know him very well. And if you've never come across him and you've never heard any of his stuff, do yourself a favour, as Molly Meldrum would say, and listen to their interview. Because Mark, and this took place about a month and a half ago, Mark's now, and I might add, he's now also the new CEO of the Fijian Drua. Now, in that interview, I would say he scales back and more or less lays out the key problem with rugby today in terms of the way it's structured, the business of rugby. Dwells a lot on the English rugby scene and why we've now got clubs like Worcester and Wasps who are basically out of the premiership. competition. But, you know, he also lays out quite simply why clubs in Australia are designed the way they are, especially rugby league clubs, which he knows a lot about. And if you take from his interview and a look at, you know, the financials of all of our clubs, and you look at what happened when the Force got kicked out, and you jump on the, you know, the Senate inquiry transcripts like I did, and you do your research, you realise how bloody hard and bloody fragile it is to run rugby in Australia. And we are not doing ourselves a favour at the moment by trying to push a model that just doesn't, it doesn't work financially. And if we're going to get private equity to come in the year or 2 years that, you know, you read about is going to happening, mate, they are going to be investing in something that is not fully valued, which means they are going to get a large piece of the revenue share for a undervalued product because we have devalued it. And that's scary to me because that suggests that we're going to get money to bail us out in the short term, but we're going to continue to owe money forever and ever until, you know, we can't pay it. And it really does worry me. But anyway, that podcast really does clear up for me, and it was a very good way of articulating, I should say, some of the massive problems that we face. And to bring this back to the Wallabies is ultimately, if the Wallabies are not successful and are not financially viable in Australia, Australian rugby suffers. People may not like that. I know people love club rugby. I know people watch Super Rugby and feel that, you know, well, it's not all about the Wallabies, but the hard fact is it kind of is. And until we find either another way of breaking it down and rebuilding it so it's not about the Wallabies, or alternatively making the Wallabies successful so we can then diversify and make it about other things, until that point, we are going to be struggling. You know, I watched the post-analysis with Morgan Tuanui and Justin Harrison and Nick McArdle and Drew Mitchell. And, you know, I have to say the guys and girls at Stan are doing a top-notch job trying to keep it upbeat and positive. You know, and I'm not saying this because my documentary's on Binge, which you should all check out if you haven't, or Fox Docos. But, you know, film was picked up by Fox. So, you know, I can't, you know, which is ironic in and of itself. You know, the one broadcaster that dropped rugby, well, didn't follow through and pick it up again, whatever you want to say on it. But, you know, people got upset about the way Fox sort of broadcast the game. But at the end of the day, is it the broadcaster's responsibility to present the game and put the game and grow the game? No, it's the administrator's really. Yeah, it's probably a partnership. And maybe there are things they could have done that they didn't do. But, you know, I think the fact that people were really shitty about Fox presenting the game the way they did and some of the commentators like Phil Kearns and others, you know, not having anything positive to say, well, unfortunately, the game has gone through some bad times. There's not a lot that they can say that is positive. And I admire the guys and girls at Stan because they're trying to keep energy levels up, positivity. They rationalise what's going on. They try to sort of, you know, look for the silver linings. And they must be conflicted because they are definitely 100% knowledgeable about a lot of the issues, certainly around people like Ben Darwin and his company and what they've put forward. And they certainly know about many of the other, you know, problems people have from club rugby and schools rugby, you know, the disgruntled community, because they do. They go around and they meet these people at classic Wallabies events and functions and luncheons and social media. So, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm grateful, though, that we have people that we do have working and pushing the game forward in the media, because it's super critical and it's all part of an ecosystem. But again, if the performances aren't there, that is going to start to hurt. And I guess to bring it back to where I'm at, which is, you know, what am I kind of doing with this thing? Well, I've pulled out my film. I've put out this podcast, and it is a lot of work and it's a lot of time, and I haven't made any money out of it. And I don't really care about that because it's more been about the journey and the love. And for me, trying to scratch an itch that was there for a number of years. The difference between me in 2011 kicking over a bin when we lost to Samoa and now when we've lost to Italy for the first time ever is I would say I'm at peace because I don't like losing and it's not fun, but at least I now know why we are in the situation we're in. It makes sense, unfortunately. And again, doesn't give me any pleasure. It doesn't give me any solace, but it just means I don't get frustrated because I don't know the answers. I think the answers are glaring and they are there. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of unknowns still, but I think foundationally it's pretty clear what Australian rugby needs to do. But whether or not they can actually do it is another story. This is going to be a very short rant. It's pretty much what it's turning into. But I do want to sort of pay a bit of, homage to the listeners, everyone that's kind of been following and, you know, messages and, you know, whether you sort of agree with me or disagree with me, I don't really care. It's as long as you're thinking about what's going on. That's probably what's key. You know, we all have our lives and rugby's just a part of it. But, you know, I think if we can sort of all come together and feel that, you know what, rugby in Australia does need to survive. It does need to stay alive. And the people that are probably going to do that are the people who are listening to this, the people who are going to their local, club and playing, the people who are waking up, staying up till 1 a.m., 2 a.m. to watch the Wallabies play Italy. The people who have got their tickets for France next year, as I have. Looking forward to going to Lyon, never been, and, sampling the sights and watching some rugby. Will we beat Fiji? I don't know. Will we beat Wales? I don't know. I don't care. I'm going to be there anyway because it's all about the experience and, you know, it's about in the years to come realizing that, you know what, you were there and you enjoyed it. I think where I'm sort of at with this whole journey, and this is certainly not because of today, is I am winding things down somewhat. This is probably going to be the second last or third last podcast episode for now. Now, for this series, which I'm going to kind of close off. I know it's been, 37 episodes, might be 38 as a single series across 2 years. It's almost like the Sopranos, the season 6 that spans 2 years. I'm going to at least call this one sort of over soon, largely because I just have so much going on in my own life that I can't properly devote it like I think it should be devoted, and much like other podcasts do, guys that I've spoken about before, the Green and Gold Rugby, the Pick and Drive, Draft Rugby, to name a few, or at least a few of the Australian ones, Rugby Wrap, those guys are committed and doing this stuff week in, week out, and I listen to as much as I can, and I suggest if you haven't already, you should definitely listen to them because, it's the podcast. I think the podcast community has a massive, massive impact on keeping rugby's conversation alive, as does the websites, the Rugby Raw, which is another kind of, big source of information and, a collective gathering of the minds. And, if you're listening and you're part of that community, well, mate, keep part of it. You don't have to do what, have to put out your own podcast. Just read, listen, comment, engage. It doesn't matter. It just as long as you stay involved, things could turn around. I really do still hope they do. I think there's going to take a lot for that to happen, but it's possible. That's the one thing that's, keeping me hopeful, dare I say it. So, as I said, the other thing I'm going to point out, which I should discuss, was the World Cup final today, of course, which took place in New Zealand. The Black Ferns, congratulations to them over the Red Roses. And again, therein lies another sort of interesting set of circumstances. Sorry, another sip of wine before I launch to this next bit. rugby is growing internationally. Surprise, surprise. And Australia, it's, you know, sort of limping along. But therein lie, today you saw an example of rugby having massive potential. Eden Park selling out in New Zealand. And the Red Roses, who were not successful, but are leading the charge on pushing the women's game. Now, I'm not going to sit here and go, yeah, the women's game is like the future. You know, the women's game is going to have the same issues the men's games has around the business of rugby. How do you fund a squad of 40 women to play for 6 months in the year and be professional, get reasonable salaries when you need to get crowds and you need to get good broadcast revenue? Like, that's going to be their sticking point. And it's certainly why the women in Australia, the Wallaroos, are not professional. And it's not because I'm pretty confident it's not because they don't want to pay them. It's because they don't have the money to pay them. Now, whether or not they could renegotiate some terms, maybe the players' union and the men especially could perhaps look in their arrangement and figure out whether they can help find a way there. That's, you know, I don't have that information, but there definitely has to be a tipping point whereby the women become professional. Because if the Wallaroos are not professional within the next, I'd say next two seasons, Australian rugby, women's rugby, will be playing catch up between now and the World Cup, in the Home World Cup in 2029. And that's, you know, that's pretty, you can say that with great certainty, because the professionals and amateurs, certainly the results at the World Cup and the results at games before that, are pretty stark. And it's a real shame, because we have some fantastic athletes, and you just need to look at our sevens program to realize that if you could put some money together and pay these women to get better at their craft, the results will be there. You know, Australia has enough talent in it, certainly within women's sport, to be one of the top three. And again, they have to be. If the Wallaroos are not a top three team, women's rugby will struggle to grow in Australia. And, you know, we could debate that all you want, but it's pretty much sort of, and that's probably the truth for, you know, the Black Ferns as well. If they're not successful, rugby would struggle to grow amongst the, you know, female player base in New Zealand. But they also don't have what we have in Australia, which is a thriving women's AFL and now the NRLW. And we, of course, you know, the Matildas, you know, women's soccer, which is massive. So, you know, how they do that, I don't know. Well, I don't know how they're going to do it. I do know what I would do if I was sort of trying to put them forward, but perhaps that's for another day. And I genuinely hope that this World Cup, and certainly today's event, is putting into motion steps to professionalise the Wallaroos, create a professional 15s women's program, perhaps somewhat aligned with or closely related to the women's sevens program, and that it's successful and that it doesn't fall into the trap of the men's, which was, you know, expanding too quickly and, you know, putting pressure on the finances and the player stocks to be successful. If they can build it right and perhaps build it differently and grow it, there is no reason why women's rugby in Australia cannot be successful and the Wallaroos, you know, be a top three side in the world. So that's all I have to say about that. But, you know, made exciting times for New Zealanders, I suppose. We'll see how they are in a year's time when the men's comp comes around in France. So that's it. I'm going to leave it at that. It's a half hour rant, rambling, bit of wine, bit of this, bit of that. But as I said, I really do appreciate the people that still listen, and I wanted to put something out there because it's been a while. As I said, I apologize. It's been a busy time. I've probably got at least one good podcast coming up episode. I'm waiting to just double confirm it. I've had a few people fall out and, or, you know, just not available, and which is a shame because it would have been great. But I've got one or two leads, shall I say, and I'd kind of like to make them be my sort of, you know, final ones for the year before I sort of just put down tools for a little bit Might do the, some stuff next year in the lead up to the World Cup, but for now I need a break. So until then, I will stay tuned and I'll hopefully have something out. If you haven't yet watched the film, please do. I, you know, love to be hearing what, I'm always happy to hear messages and get responses and feedback. It's still available on Binge in Australia, Fox Docos. South African viewers can still watch it, I'm told, on SABC via their on-demand function. I'm not quite sure how it works. And I'd like to have thought that I'd have had some response about or have some news about where else it will be released in the world, but I still haven't gotten that yet. But, you know, as soon as I hear that I can release it in the US and UK and other places, I will certainly be, you know, uploading out on the social media channels. So stay tuned if you're still overseas. Or talk to a friend who's in Australia and get a VPN and figure it out and watch Binge. That's probably the short answer. But anyway, till then, I will speak to you again. Appreciate if you've listened to this far, if you still listen. I'll sign off drinking some wine and frustrated in London, but still here.
This is the Gold Digger podcast series, a spin-off from the new feature documentary film, Gold Digger, The Search for Australian Rugby, which you can now watch in Australia on Fox Docos via Foxtel Go and Binge, with other territories around the world coming soon. Music from this episode is by Ryan Papahatsis and Brad Vanderlucht from Fade Out Audio. Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/golddiggerrugby and follow us on Instagram for pretty pictures and Twitter for banal chatter. Till next time, keep on digging.